Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Schertl-Taub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from a snowy Connecticut is Richard Bistrong. Richard is the CEO of Frontline Anti-Bribery, and we're going to talk today about training in this new remote world. First, Richard, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Adam, it's great to reconnect and to join the SCCE and HCCA communities again.
Oh, thanks. Well, glad to always have you visit. Now, for a lot of years now, organizations have had a mix of live and online training, and that's continued even if the live training is now conducted over the web. First, how do you think organizations should decide what kind of training they still need to do and can do live, but in a virtual format?
So, Adam, it's a great question, and I think we have to do a little bit of reverse engineering. So when we think about training, let's start with the goals, right? Is the goal of the training, you know, regulatory training? Is it maybe refreshing prior training? Is it more around education, sensitivity, and awareness, maybe around emerging risks, or just having an informal session? So I think the point is we need to think about what we do virtually live, so to speak, and what training can be taken at your own speed or maybe asynchronously distributed. That needs to be driven by the goals. And then you can take the technology and platform and work around that. And I think, you know, just by way of level setting, Adam, and, you know, going back to last year at this time, I think there was just a reaction of, okay, let's maybe kick the can down the road on some training and see how things develop. And then after that, it was more of, okay, let's just take what was going to be live and transition over it, you know, to virtual training. But it's not a linear transition, Adam. And there's been some great research around this. And I can't recommend Nick Morgan's book enough. It's called Can You Hear Me? How to Connect with People in a Virtual World. And what was interesting is it was written in 2018. So it's even more relevant now. And he gives us a great, you know, roadmap for staying out of the digital dragon's teeth of training and communication where, you know, in person, you know, at SCCE events, we're all active participants, right? We're engaging with one another, we're reading body chemistry, we're interacting with content both when it's formally presented and on coffee breaks. So we're active. And I think in our virtual world, when we think about training, now the default is passive. We're multitasking, not necessarily as focused as we would be in in-house training. So I think, you know, as we have our discussion, we really need to think about this in a deeper sense. It's just not moving what was live in-house to live virtual. It's a more complicated equation than that, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely more complicated. And even at the simplest level, it's hard to tell people, okay, put your phones away because, you know, you're not watching what they're doing as they're sitting at their desk looking at this stuff or sitting on their sofa or lying in bed or, you know, out by the pool, wherever. It's just a very different experience. Now, you do training for a living. I want to tap into that. How should those preparing the training approach their work in this new, you know, over the web environment to ensure that it has value in it?
So let's go back to the reverse engineering. So let's ask, is the training calibrated to the emerging risks and the real world risks that the former commercial Richards face, right? Because if we want it to have value, I think it needs to be calibrated to the risks that people are facing right now. So it might be a good time to look at your training calendar, take a step back, take a deep breath, and ask if it needs to be re-engineered. You know, Adam, is this a good time or an appropriate time to double down on travel and entertainment training, or maybe this is a good time to think about, well, we might want to reach out and give additional support so people understand how to respond to virtual requests for donations from third parties and public officials. So to do that, I think it's a great time maybe to take a mini pulse from your teams and to get some feedback and have an open feedback loop to make sure that these risks and issues are getting addressed. I think that's what brings value and really reinforces that as ethics and compliance leaders, you're there to keep everyone successful and safe in what's a very dynamic and certainly a changing and challenging environment. It's almost like reinforcing the message that you want people to appreciate that you're there to make sure that everyone as an individual and the organization as a whole isn't left with the regulatory crisis after the current health and economic crisis has passed. And I think that will really help give the workforce a sense of appreciation for the value that you're trying to bring to both their success and their safety.
And obviously, you want to create as much value for the workforce as possible. And you make a really good point there that really before the question shouldn't be, how do you just alter this training? Is you really do need to go back and look to see how your risk profile has changed and then make sure that the training reflects that. Now, how should trainers approach the delivery of the training to ensure that's effective in an online or even hybrid environment?
The hybrid is a great part of this because as we emerge from this crisis and we go into what might be a hybrid learning environment, I didn't even know there was such a thing called proximity bias, but we need to be aware of it. We don't want people who are still working remotely to think that they're somehow or another not appreciated or respected as much as the people who are in office. So I would just raise sensitivity that, you know, as we move into a hybrid environment, maybe think about how we inspire and influence the people who aren't in the office for those sessions. But back to the question, I think we need to think multi-channel, right? So when we're thinking effectiveness, I think we should be thinking it's not just implementing, it's also influencing and inspiring. So a few examples, think about slides, right? When we put slides up, we're losing whatever limited interpersonal connection that we have. So is it better maybe to talk about an issue, talk about an emerging risk, get people inspired, engaged, interactive with the training, invite comments, and then maybe to have reading materials available, what might have been a slide in person, and have that available asynchronously for people to read afterwards. Again, I think if we really motivate people in the live environment, they're going to be more likely to deep dive into those materials afterwards. So that decision as to what needs to be shared live and what can be distributed afterwards, that's a critical one in terms of training effectiveness. So it goes back to the goals. I think if it's formal regulation, maybe that does require more formal structure, where if it's sensitivity and awareness, that might not be necessary. There was a great article in the Financial Times. I think you'll like the title. We must do more to kill off meeting monsters. They interviewed a meeting consultant. Her name is Madeline DeHawk, and I had the pleasure of speaking with her. Really interesting. And what she shares in the article is running a meeting well, and she's talking a virtual meeting, takes skill. People need to know in advance why they are at the meeting, what they're supposed to achieve, who really needs to be there, and how should they contribute. And she says, that's obvious, but it's not. As anyone who has been to a pointless waffling gabfest knows. Now, that's a little bit extreme, but I think she's right. We need to think, just because we can invite someone to training, does that mean that we should invite them? You know, as people are on these back-to-back sessions. So maybe giving someone a hall pass on an issue that normally they would have been trained in person and saying, you know what, right now this isn't really applicable to you in your work, so we're going to let you skip this session, but I really need you at another one that is very important. And I think those are the things that can really get the attention of the workforce to know that when they are invited, it's because we really do need their attention and their focus.
Well, and I think one of the good ways to do it, as you're noting, is making sure that it's relevant for them and making sure that you're delivering the training that they need that's right for this moment. Now, to your experience, how interactive can you make the training? You know, a lot of live training involves breaking people up into groups to solve problems. Is there a way that you find it can still be done effectively?
It can, but it requires that same level of thoughtfulness that we put into our training when we were in person. So again, I think we need to think multi-channel. And we shouldn't undervalue even a phone call or a video with a small group or even a one-on-one with someone that we know faces difficult circumstances. So I think we could make it very interactive. Small teams are great, and you know, but we have to take some leadership. So it might be asking questions, running polls, getting feedback right from the start. You might even ask people to upvote on issues that are impacting them. That's going to get them interested and engaged in problem solving. But Adam, that requires some planning. So if you're a compliance leader running a session, you might want to have a moderator sort of monitoring that chat stream and communicating to you via a direct message, okay, this is what I'm seeing on the chat stream, so that there's a little bit of teamwork there. Again, go back to in-house training, right? There are always teams there to support audiovisual, maybe passing around microphones, helping to monitor questions. Well, we need that same sort of support virtually as we do when we're in-house. So a great practice is, you know, small groups, but even with a small group, stop every so often, take a mini pulse, solicit feedback, you know, build in some virtual stretches. And also, Adam, allow some digital drift at the beginning and end. You know, people might be, again, back to back. So give people a few minutes to show up a little late. And if they have to leave a little early, that's okay too. So you might not want to save the most important parts of these sessions right at the start and right at the end. So I think, you know, we really need to appreciate that people are digitally stressed right now, and letting them know what the goals are. Should you turn your video on or off at the beginning of a session? That's a good one. I don't know about you, but when I have my video on in a session, sometimes I'm looking to make sure my tie's on straight, or, you know, my appearance, I'm looking at everyone else's appearance. That can be distracting. So again, that goes back to the thoughtfulness of maybe we'll have everyone turn their videos on at the beginning, wave, say hello, do a little bit of a virtual stretch. And then when we go into the training, people can turn their videos off and focus on the content. Goes back to, it's just not a linear equation moving from in-house to virtual.
Well, you made the comment about not doing the important stuff at the very beginning or the very end, but I unfortunately didn't hear that while I was coming up with these questions, and have a very important question to end with, and we have limited time, is how do you assess the effectiveness of training in this environment?
It might be good to open up office hours, you know, so many times a week, you know, have an open Zoom room, so to speak, to solicit feedback. Ask for, you know, have an open feedback loop. It's one of the things that Nick Morgan talks about. But Adam, don't ask for feedback if you're not prepared to think and act on constructive feedback as to how you might improve your virtual training effectiveness.
Great. Well, Richard, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us. I mean, it's been remarkable for me to see how much stuff has moved online and how successfully, but it's not always smooth. It's not always easy, and we always can make it better. So again, thank you for these insights and for sharing them with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.